You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1 for another fun week, and this time out we are going to be having Darren and Sabrina take over the station once again, and this time they're going to be talking about cosplay, crossplay at conventions, and just, you know, whatever else they feel like talking about. Sometimes it's like herding cats when you get the two of them taking over the station. And it's always a lot of fun though. And I'm glad with the letters we've gotten and some of the people just, you know, stopping me saying they're really glad we, you know, recognize the LGBT community on the show and such. And, you know, we're open to everybody on the show. And speaking of open to everybody, let's welcome my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy. Yes, the segment, you'll have to hide the children away, I'm afraid, but it's a fun discussion.
Well, you know, we always have the explicit tag on ESO when we
whenever have... Darren and Sabrina are talking about, the price of milk.
Exactly. Yeah, so how's the weather today? Beep, 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 beep. You know, it's not even worth it for me to bleep them out, you know. Let the two kids have fun and just slap that explicit tag on it. So... cool. How are you this week, sir?
Well, unfortunately, I'm sustaining a bit of an injury, which prohibited me from going to an AcroCon, which we'll talk about later because you were there. So we'll talk about that at the con report. But yes, I am healing ever so slowly. But
how long are you going to be laid up with us?
I don't know. I was kind of hoping that it would be that I'd be back on my feet today. But as we're recording this, it's Monday, and I think it's a little bit better. I think I'll be able to go back to work tomorrow. But
okay. Do you have to walk with a cane or anything? Or
no, I don't. I mean, I don't even have a cane. So, you know, I'll just have to be pretty careful and not do any, you know, of my fantastic busta moves.
Totally makes sense. So, you know, no break dancing for you, in other words.
No, because I broke.
Exactly. Well, remember, folks, this show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store, where you can buy really cool geeky material, including, you know, stuff we talked about on last week with Saturday Night Live, and also probably, you know, talking about what we're about to talk about. We're going to chat about the passing of Leonard Nimoy in a sec. And, you know, we'll have up on the ESO store probably some Mission Impossible, some Star Trek, and some of the other projects he worked on and that he directed. But, you know, so we'll get into all that. And, you know, in lieu of rants and raves this week, let's, you know, just talk about it. And we actually are going to bring our friend Mark Maddox in because when I thought of it, it's like Mike said, we got to have Maddox on for this segment. So, hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Yeah, it wasn't a shock because I had heard he had been rushed to the hospital a couple of days before for chest pains.
Yeah, anytime a 83-year-old man goes into the hospital for chest pains, you kind of wonder. And he's had some health issues before. I mean, unfortunately, he spent a lot of his life smoking and, you know, he's kind of paid for that.
Well, exactly. And even he quit smoking over 30 years ago, but it just shows
that the damage was done.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sure.
And because it was worse than having what he had was, you know, a severe case of emphysema, and which, you know, is blocking the air to his lungs, and that was hurting his blood flow and such. And, you know, there was pictures, I think last year, him in a wheelchair at an airport, you know, with an oxygen tank and everything.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, in some ways we were prepared, but, you know, when an icon like this passes, I mean, it still leaves a hole.
So, you know, Mark, what was, you know, when you, you know, you said you definitely wanted to be on, what did your reaction to this?
It was a big yelling, oh no, across the house when I heard it. I mean, it was a big yell. I mean, Linda was in the room across the way, and I just screamed it when I read it. I couldn't believe what I was reading. We've lost quite possibly the most significant, at least American, science fiction television, actor or character, person who created a character ever in American television. Mr. Spock is really is a lot of it's a creation of Gene Roddenberry, but a lot of it's a creation of Leonard Nimoy as well.
Absolutely.
And because of it, it is the greatest loss. I mean, it's not like a John Lennon loss where he was cut down in his prime or anything like that. But it just is the significance of Mr. Spock is no science fiction television character is bigger. There is nobody. Maybe in England they've got the Doctor Who, which they were running parallel at the same time. But in the United States, there is no science fiction character bigger than Mr. Spock. It's the numero uno, and he has been imitated many, 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 many times, but it's never been done as well. And so it's tough. I was a little boy. I saw my first Star Trek episode in 1967 on Armed Forces Television in Ramstein, Germany, and they were running them in order. So I saw Corbomite Maneuver first, and the show was so ahead of its time. I remember I was only like about 5 or 6 at the time, and I was like looking at this thing going, let me see if I got this straight. There's a weird-looking spaceship that isn't a rocket. It's not a saucer. There's a good guy on there that's basically kind of evil-looking, but he's a good guy. And I remember watching that show and then going out to play later, and it was still in my head later at the end of the day. And throughout my life, especially in tough times like when my dad was in Vietnam or when I was in my first years of high school, Star Trek was there for me. The original Star Trek, the first 3 seasons was something, and when you found other people that loved it, it was like, hey, life is okay. I mean, and Nimoy was a massive part of that. It's one of those things, I mean, you know, where you defended it. I remember getting into fistfights in the schoolyard over bullies wanting to pick on me because I liked Star Trek in 1971 and 72. You know, I won. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that for me, it was just he's like the uncle. He's like your uncle that – I don't know how you say it. The uncle you never met but that you loved. So anyway, I'll quit rambling. Go ahead.
No, it's interesting because you're a little bit older than us, and that's not an old joke or anything.
No.
So it was more of, you know, somebody – because like Leonard Nimoy to me was – all repeats until I started watching In Search Of.
Right.
And such. And so, you know, but, you know, he was always there with, you know, different projects he was working on and such. And it was not like, oh my God, Leonard Nimoy died. I was heartbroken. But it's an icon in sci-fi.
Sure.
And such.
And just an icon in pop culture. I mean, as Mark said, I mean, you don't have to be a geek to know the significance of Spock. I mean, he shows up when you see a list of top whatever number creations of TV characters of all time. Star Trek shows up. I mean, you know, when he's so, you know, associated with the character that even at work where a lot of people there are not, you know, hardcore Trekkies or anything like that. They didn't say, oh, did you hear Leonard Nimoy died? They said, oh, Spock died. I mean, it was just to them the equivalent.
But you have to understand something too. When I was a kid, I mean, I kind of went through, I was lucky in that respect. I went through the whole, hey, this show is so big that it will stop everybody who's trying to naysay it. It'll stop the guy, the creep in the schoolyard. It'll stop the executive that's trying not to get it made, et cetera, et cetera. And, I remember when I was a kid, the biggest show of all time, what everybody thought was the biggest show of all time before Star Trek was I Love Lucy. I Love Lucy was the big show. It was the winner. Everybody showed it. It's like the joke in Crocodile Dundee. He turns on the TV set. He goes, yeah, that's what we were watching over in Australia too. But the thing is that Star Trek with only its 3 seasons and not a massive ratings winner when it came on, beat the odds. And not only did it come in and beat those odds, but it also gave us a template and a pattern for people to fight for science fiction in a way. I mean, organization and all that kind of stuff. I defy either one of you guys to name me, other than within England, it's Doctor Who. I defy you to name me a more important or significant science fiction character on American television. Name it, and I'll give you $1 million. There isn't.
I totally agree with that.
I love Captain Kirk as much, maybe even a little bit more, but I'll say this. Captain Kirk is still just almost kind of a throwback to the Western heroes we were getting on television almost around the same time. Spock was the new thing. Spock was the completely thinking out of left field. And I still remember watching that first episode and going, God, that's weird.
Well, as you said, when you and I were talking on the phone, though, you said that's how it redefined how people thought of aliens, too.
Sure, absolutely. You know, it's funny because, I mean, I do think of it at the time, and I'm sure – I mean, there's other things like Flash Gordon had alien people that were good guys and all kind of stuff. But it still didn't play the way Spock did. Spock really felt like he came out of a science fiction novel. And I mean by somebody like an Asimov or a Clark or something. Roddenberry was heavily into that kind of stuff. And Spock was respected in the science fiction community as a valid and well-made character. You know, as opposed to, you know, and I'm not dissing Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers or anything like that, but you know, they were it just wasn't the same kind of characters to me, you know.
Right, and they, you know, the Spock. I mean, at the, you know, when they originally saw him, the networks freaked out because they thought he looked too devilish, and yeah, this guy with that, you know, pointy ears, and he looks like Satan. You can't have him on the show, et cetera, et cetera. And Gene fought for him, and that was a smart play. But really, it was Leonard who, as you said, Mark, put it all together. Because without someone of Leonard's character and acting ability, I mean, that's what really inspired writers to explore what it meant to be human through this character. He's half Vulcan, half human. He struggles with it almost on every episode. And you can see that struggle, and it plays off. You know, I've seen over the years, I've seen many, many, many actors play Vulcans. And, you know, Nimoy set the template, but it's also, you know, he set the bar. And it's and not too many come even close.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, remember all the TV shows we used to get? Well, once again, I'm a little older than you guys, but I know you guys, if you didn't see these shows, you at least remember the names. Man from Atlantis, The Phoenix, Starman. I mean, these television shows that were trying to come up with their own weird, you know, alien character, hip alien character. I'm sorry. I mean, even on Logan's Run, the fact that they had a robot guy on there, Rem, I think was his name. Yeah. I mean, they were all Mr. Spock clones. And you know, once again, I don't diss any of this stuff. I love all this stuff. You know what I mean? But the thing is that Spock was first, and Spock was still the best. It's still the best. It's still the best character.
Absolutely. And outside of Star Trek, I mean, he went on to act in quite a few really good roles. He went on to direct some really good films. He went on to he's a noted photographer. He's a big endowment of the
endowment of the arts.
Yeah, sure. he really believes in the arts and what they can do for people. And you know, because of his experience, he's also really anti-smoking. But you know, he was always a joy to see, and no matter what project you watched him in, it was just one of those things where you're kind of like, oh, Leonard's in it, that's pretty cool. And you know, whatever he was in could have not really been that good, but you know that Leonard's going to be good in it.
Sure. Well, I mean, for like some of them that I really loved, and some of them are pre-Spock, is like he had bit parts that he did in science fiction films. He was in Them real briefly. He was an alien bad guy in one of the old Commando Cody style Rocket Man type. I can't remember the name. I want to say it maybe Radar Men from the Moon or whatever. But, you know, he was one of the three main villains going around in one of those old style 1950s rocket ships. And he didn't look his when you look at him in it, he doesn't look too far from Mr. Spock. But and then other great one of my favorite roles that he had was in the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Absolutely.
He was very good in that. And then, you know, just seeing him on television, seeing him in all the later films, all the Star Trek movies and everything like that. The man was a class act.
He was, and I think, you know, with all this history he has, we should actually do an episode dedicated to him.
Absolutely.
I absolutely agree completely.
I definitely 100%. Think, you know, like we did a few months back with Robin Williams after he passed on, I think it would be just as well to, and well received doing a Leonard Nimoy episode.
I think it's mandatory. Yeah. I think, I mean, given that this is ESO, I mean, we just lost one of our, you know, royalty, for lack of a better term.
No, very much so. And it's kind of very therapeutic, but also you get the trolls out there already. And we'll talk about that.
Ew.
You know, you already have the people.
Why bother? I don't want to give them any sort of attention. No,
they deserve nothing. They deserve
absolutely nothing.
They don't. No. And the things, even giving Shatner crap.
I don't even want to talk about it.
About the funeral stuff.
There are people just crying for attention.
Of course they are.
Everybody knows. I know this for a fact that Shatner and Nimoy really, really cared about you. I knew that. You could tell by the way they talked to each other when they saw each other. So I don't want to hear that crap.
Yeah. That's bogus. You know?
Yeah.
But we want to hear from you guys. What are your guys' memories about Leonard Nimoy? What's your favorite roles he played? What was your favorite art exhibit he did? You know, write us, esopodcast@gmail.com. We would love to, you know, when we do our Leonard Nimoy episode in a few weeks, we will have read what you guys wrote and such. It'll be awesome. With that being said, let's take a quick break now, and we'll be back with The Geek Seat.
Hello, Christopher. What insanity are you up to today?
Oh, hey, Lydia. I'm downloading some movies.
What? People are always telling me that's illegal.
Uh-uh, not these. They're all public domain. Oh, look, Rescue from Gilligan's Island.
Well, let me see what you're doing. Oh, you're at archive.org. Well, they have thousands of films, TV shows, commercials, radio shows, and books available.
Yeah, but there are so many. I wish there was a podcast or something that would discuss these things. You know, give us an idea of what's worth the time.
Christopher, there is. We do one.
Oh, that's right. We host Orphan Entertainment. Once a month, we pick something from archive.org and review and discuss it. That sure is nice of us.
Sure. Why don't you click over to orphan-entertainment.jonja.net and remind yourself a little more about the show?
Will do. So let's see. That's orphan-entertainment.jonja.net. Hey, can we review the Gilligan's Island movie sometime?
Mm-hmm. We'll see, Christopher. We'll see.
Welcome back. Now we are here with a new friend of the show, Martin Gillette of Jolanta. Welcome, sir.
Howdy.
Hey, how you doing?
For the listeners out there, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, a little bit about me. Okay. Well, as you may be able to tell from my accent, I am not a native Georgian. I was born in England, and I'm half German and half Syrian. I've had the opportunity to have lived in a variety of places in different countries, and I've always liked collecting things. So that's been with me ever since I was a little kid, and that's how I find myself doing what I'm doing today.
Which is, of course, now you are the main organizer behind Jolanta.
I am, yeah. I am the director for Jolanta and the Great Atlanta Toy Convention, and that's a huge thrill and something that I absolutely love doing.
The event is March 13th, 14th, and 15th at the Marriott Century Center. It's coming up pretty soon. Are you all ready?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, now, you know, obviously as it gets closer to the show, there's more and more to do and to connect all the dots so everything goes as seamless as possible. But, yeah, everything is coming together really nicely. And, I'm just very excited about it, excited about seeing all the many friends that we've made over the years that come from, you know, 15 to 20 different states. And we have one dealer and friends coming from the United Kingdom. So, yeah, it's great. It's a great time.
It's a show that has a big history here too. I mean, it's been around for, wow, more than 10 years, right?
Yes. Yeah. It actually started 15 years ago by a friend of mine, Buddy Finnessy, who had started the Atlanta G.I. Joe Club. And he and a couple other friends decided after a while that it would be a good idea to do a regional show for some of the folks that couldn't always go and attend some of the bigger conventions, specifically for G.I. Joe. And that's kind of how Joe Lanza started. And for the first few years, it was primarily G.I. Joe. And then as the years progressed, more and more different types of action figures were introduced. And then, quite honestly, over the last 5 or so years, just such a large variety of toys and collectibles and pop culture items that it's kind of now morphed into the Great Atlanta Toy Convention as well. And that's kind of why it has such a long name. We have so many avid G.I. Joe followers, and they kind of remember Joe Lanza, and they're coming for Joe Lanza. But we're making so many new friends with the Great Atlanta Toy Convention and all the different events that have kind of been layered into that event. And so it's very exciting.
Now, Martin, did you start out collecting? I mean, were you a collector of G.I. Joe toys?
Well, interestingly enough, so as I mentioned, I was born in England.
Right.
And in England, G.I. Joe's cousin is Action Man. And okay. So, a company called Power Toy licensed from Hasbro, and they basically came up with their version of G.I. Joe called Action Man. And this started in 1969. And I think it was 1970 that I got my first Action Man. And had a few of them over the years. And my younger brother, who was 9 years younger than I, ended up playing with them. And luckily enough, to this day, I still actually have two of my original Action Men. And so I always liked those. And 15 or so years ago, when I first met Buddy, we met through our mutual cartooning and artwork. And kind of one thing led to another, and I realized when I went over to his place one day that he had this gigantic G.I. Joe collection. I was like, oh my gosh, man, I have my Action Men still. And so, I mean, from then on, we hit it off, and it was terrific.
That's awesome. Now, some of the guests that are going to appear at Joe Lanza this weekend, I see that you have, of course, Mr. G.I. Joe himself, Larry Hama.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, Larry Hama has been coming for a number of years. Unfortunately, he had an injury last year, so he wasn't able to attend. But yes, we're very excited to have him back. He's definitely a crowd favorite.
Any additional guests than that? Or?
Yes, absolutely. So we have Tom Feaster, who is also a G.I. Joe artist and has appeared in many comics, DC and Image. He will be there. We also have Don Teams, one of the walkers from The Walking Dead, and he will be there. He will actually also appear. We have a Walking Dead panel, and he will be one of the panelists, so that should be pretty exciting.
Very nice.
And then we have Jeremy Fisher, who is an animator who has done work for Robot Chicken, and he will be a guest, and he will also be doing a presentation as a panel. So we do have quite a few interesting panels that many of which revolve around toys, but there are also some that don't, like, for instance, the Robot Chicken thing. I mean, it's toys being animated. We have a panel on comic book creation, character creation, that Kyle from Galactic Quest comic book stores is going to be putting on. We're going to have a panel on Monster High, which is, as I'm sure you know, it's a hugely popular girls' line of toys at this point. So we have an expert there. We're going to be having a Transformers panel with some experts there, too. We also have a character toys from the 80s panel. So there's a lot of interesting and exciting panels to do. So not only are they 200 tables full of all kinds of toys and collectibles, but if people want to kind of sit down and chill out and go to a panel, there'll be panels going all day Saturday and all day Sunday.
And some of our good friends are going to be there as well. I know that Ricky and Bambi from Radio Cult will be attending.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I know that Phantom Troublemaker, who's a host of Needless Things, as well as a co-host on the Earth Station Who podcast, he's going to be there talking about toys.
He sure is. As a matter of fact, he's the one that's going to be putting on the panel on the character toys.
Absolutely.
So we're definitely looking forward to that. And Ricky and Bambi with Radio Cult, I mean, they're always, again, a crowd favorite, and they will be performing on Saturday night at 10 o'clock.
Excellent.
So tickets for that can be purchased at the show in a cadet package, and that can be bought at the door.
To me, one of the highlights of the show as well, when I was there a couple years ago, was the wonderful, is it dioramas or custom figures that are put together by folks, and you have a little competition, and it just, I mean, some of that stuff is absolutely amazing. It makes me feel like I'm like, you know, 6 years old again.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Every single year we've been having these custom figure and diorama contests, and it has continually grown. And as a matter of fact, this year we have dedicated a special room for all of that. So I think that will be kind of cordoned off, and people will be able to kind of enjoy that and compete as well. So everybody and anybody is asked, really, if they want to go ahead and bring a custom, any kind of custom toy. It doesn't have to be an action figure, anything with some imagination that you would like to share with everyone. You know, that's what this is all about, really. It's kind of like a big family reunion. Some of us know each other, but at the end of the day, when people leave, everybody's met somebody new and hopefully has had a really good time. And it's just kind of sharing the love of toys. And I know I can speak for myself, you know, I'm a 49-year-old with a 12-year-old mentality for toys. You know, you just remember a simpler time and just, you know, and I think that's what people appreciate when they come to one of our shows, that they're just, it's a nice atmosphere and environment, and they get to kind of take a walk down memory lane and maybe see things that they haven't seen in a long time that kind of bring back these great old memories. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Absolutely. It's definitely, I had a great time there. So I look forward to checking it out again, March 14th and 15th at the Marriott Century Center in Atlanta. You can find out all information at joelanta.org. And is there anything else you want to, any last words before we strap you down to the geek seat?
Well, again, just so welcome everybody and anybody to come out and enjoy it with us. And we look forward to seeing you all.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Mike, he's ready for you.
Are you sure you're right. ready? Are you sure you're ready? That's the thing.
I don't know. I hope so.
I always have that nervous laugh.
As we like to say on the show, though, no one really is ever ready for the geek seat.
Okay. I will try my best.
Oh, I know you can do it, sir. You put on a convention. You have to have some kind of cojones to do this.
Yes, yes.
Okay, here we go. Your first question in the geek seat is, what was your favorite geek out moment?
All right, so I'm going to broaden my horizons a little bit here. So I have, as I mentioned earlier, I've always been a collector of one thing or another. And in the early 80s, it was music. And it was music for quite a long time. And one of my favorite bands, and honestly still one of my favorite bands, is Depeche Mode. Electronic, you know, pioneer group out of the UK. Back in the mid 80s, I found myself living again in London, and I was shopping one day, probably in Covent Garden or something like that. And I was walking down the street, and all of a sudden, ahead of me, I see one of Depeche Mode's members. His name is Martin Gore, one of the songwriters and singers. And I couldn't believe it. And there he was. So, you know, I mean, here I am. I start kind of following him, like, you know, stalking him or something. And he's looking at things and he turns around and I pretend that I'm looking at something else. And then I realize, I look around and there's like three or four other people kind of doing the same thing that I am. And we're all kind of hovering around, kind of trying to give him his space. And we followed for a little bit and he finally went into some kind of an S&M shop. And I'm like, well, that's where we're going to part company. So that was a lot of fun. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Okay. I could see that totally being, you know, like, don't let me see that he's looking at me. Nope, nope, I'm not looking at him. Nope, nope, nope.
Right, exactly. It's like a bad movie, you know?
Of course. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Let's see. Back in the early 2000s, I was self-publishing my own humor magazine with a variety of different artists called Flack Magazine. And it was kind of like a takeoff of Mad Magazine. That was another passion of mine. And so I was at Dragon Con. I used to get a table in Artist Alley. And we were trying to put together issue number 3 that was going to be an all monster issue. So a humor monster issue. And the cover of which I was trying to find an artist that would really stand out and do a cover. And so one of the special guests there was Bernie Wrightson. And obviously we all know he is like a superstar. And I guess me and my naivete at the time kind of approached him, you know, with the idea, hey, would you like to draw the cover to Flack Magazine? And he just turned me down so quick. He just like looked at me and said, no, there was no, you know, he didn't ask about it. He just chooped. And so I kind of felt a little deflated there, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll go away now. But anyway, everything ended up working out fine. I had another great artist, who Ben Bowling, who ended up doing the cover, and he actually did. We did a take on Creepy Number One that Jack Davis, the famous Mad Magazine artist, had illustrated.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, and so Ben Bowling did a take off of what he had done, and it turned out fantastic. So I was very happy, but yeah, a little disappointed at the same time.
Sure. What geeks you out the most?
Well, I just mentioned Mad Magazine, and when I was in Kuwait, I lived in Kuwait for about 6 years. And this was when I was around 10 years old. And I one day was going, I had just seen the movie Jaws. And I was walking with my parents into the Sheraton Hotel. We were going to have lunch. And I saw in the window there of the bookstore, there was Mad Magazine number 180 with the shark coming up, Jaws, and Alfred E. Newman was swimming above. And the shark's going, yuck, like, you know, what, well, man. I didn't know. Anyway. That immediately caught my eye, and I my parents bought that for me. I started reading, and I fell in love with the magazine. And so I collected in Kuwait and then stopped collecting, obviously, in my teenage years, but picked it up again in the mid-90s. And that's kind of what got me drawing as well. And so geek out moments there would be meeting a lot of the usual gang of idiots. So I have had the opportunity to meet Jack Davis, Sergio Aragonés. I've had the opportunity to meet Kelly Freeze and get their signatures and talk to them. And Al Feldstein was probably the biggest because he was the editor who took the magazine to the heights that it actually got to. And so that was always a huge thrill for me to collect math, to talk to these guys, to maybe buy some of their artwork. And that was phenomenal.
Awesome. Let's look at the flip side of that, though. What turns your geek off?
Honestly, you know, I think it's really important. Relationships are important. And I think that the folks should embrace their interests and what turns them on. But it shouldn't consume every ounce of their being. It shouldn't be all what they talk about, all what they do, all what they like, or all what they associate or who they associate with. I think it's really important that people can hold a conversation with many different people talking about many different topics. And so I would say it turns me off when I see someone who is so consumed. I mean, I appreciate it and I'm happy for them, But, you know, there's more to it than just being overly consumed with just one, you know, aspect of geekdom, for instance, you know.
Oh, sure. Totally understand that. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Oh, let's see. Well, you know, I have that those second two questions almost like one and the same person. So there's there was a show back in the UK called Fawlty Towers.
I'm not sure if you've heard. Yeah. Oh, we knew it well.
Yeah, John Cleese, you know, from one of the Monty Python alumni was in this show, and, you know, he played a character called Basil Fawlty, and, you know, he was the owner of Fawlty Towers, this hotel in Torquay, and he, what I appreciated about him was that he, you know, he had no patience whatsoever. He was arrogant, and he had no patience whatsoever with his hotel guests or anybody that came there. I mean, if they like upset him, at the very least, I mean, he would kind of like let them have it, and he was just kind of rude and but so funny at the same time. And I had been in retail for over 20 years, in various capacities, and having to deal with the general public, you know, in multitudes. At many a time, I would think about him and go, man, I sure wish I could just act like him and say those things to, you know, to whoever's in front of me there and not have to just kind of grin and take it and the customer's always right. So I would like to meet him, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of you know, kind of one of his tirades. So.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
All right, I got a couple, but one of them... another big fan, I really like Clint Eastwood, so I've been watching Clint Eastwood's movies forever, and from one of his movies, The Outlaw Josie Wales, dying ain't much of a living, boy. I think that's, I like that. Yeah, I like that. Now, it's another one that's obscure, and I don't know if people will know this, but the series that Peter Sellers starred in, The Pink Panther. And so there was one of them called The Pink Panther Strikes Again. And there was a scene where he goes into this Bavarian little hotel, bed and breakfast. And there's a little dog there. And he asks the clerk, the counter, the person at the counter there, he said, does your dog bite? And the guy says, no. So he goes to pet the dog, and it immediately, like, bites him. And he jumps up and he goes, I thought you said your dog doesn't bite. He said, that's not my dog.
One of my favorites on that one. That is awesome. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you that I am so fortunate to be really doing it right now. I mean, I love toys. I love pop culture and collectibles. And, you know, I've the opportunity to actually direct a big convention that focuses around toys and collectibles is phenomenal. And I couldn't really ask for anything better than that. And coupled with that, I also do buy collections of toys and collectibles, and I sell that on eBay. And so I'm always buying things and doing research and finding out more about these great artifacts and their history. And so, man, I'm kind of living the dream right now. I'm loving it.
That is awesome. What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
Not like to do. I can honestly say I am not one, believe it or not, and this may get me in trouble, but I am not one to dress up. So I would not necessarily be very good at or feeling comfortable dressing up in some kind of cosplay outfit. I can appreciate people appreciating that, but me doing it, like, you know, to kind of garner some kind of attention, no, that's not me.
That's awesome. That is awesome. All right, you ready for your final question, Martin?
Yeah.
Your final question is, what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Yeah, well, it's, I will tell you, it's mine, but it is also something that we are striving to do, and that is to one day open a toy and diorama museum here in Atlanta.
Oh, that would be amazing.
The foundation that I work for, the Cody Lane Foundation, that is the foundation's goal. And Joe Lanza and the Great Atlanta Toy Convention are part of the Cody Lane Foundation. And so all the proceeds and everything from the show go toward this goal of one day opening this museum that I think would be really beneficial to so many people. I know many years ago there was a toy museum here in Atlanta, and I think it has not been here for quite a while, but I think that's something that a lot of people would appreciate. So that's why I do everything that I always do, whether it's directing here for the toy shows, or whether it was when I put out the magazines. And when people appreciate what you do and you kind of bring some joy to it, I mean, to me, that's kind of priceless. So that's, I'd leave you with that, man. That would be my ultimate fantasy.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, Martin, you've made it through the Geek Seeds.
All right. Yeehaw.
Congratulations. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
Well, you have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $333.33.
All right. I'll take it.
Very cool. Well, it's been great having you on. I definitely look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks at JoLanta. And we will have the links for JoLanta on our show notes as well as our website. So we're encouraging everybody to come check it out as well.
All right. Thank you so much. And take it easy, everybody.
Thank you, sir. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Everybody, welcome back. It's that fabulous time of the month again, or the quarter, or the week, or however long they have us here before they figure out how to get rid of us, and then we have to sneak back on board the station. It's me and Sabrina Pandora. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, kids.
We're going to talk about LGBT issues with fandom today, and we're going to talk specifically about convention going, because we've all been to conventions, right? And if you haven't, you should go to one. Small one, large one, don't care. Just go. Be with your people. It's a good thing for the most part. So when I was a kid growing up, and I didn't know what the hell I was as far as sex was concerned, I went to Atlanta Fantasy Fair, which is no longer around.
I went to Atlanta Fantasy Fair.
Yeah. 1986 was my first year, or 86 or 85, I forget. But it was at the Omni Hotel, and it was the biggest con in the area, as far as I knew back then. And from there, I branched out. I went to Dixie Trek. I did Magnum Opus Con. You know, I became a con slut back then. If there was a con, I was there. You know? But as time went on...
I'm going to let you be the con slut.
Well, thank you. As time went on, I turned 18, and I realized, you know, I need to get rid of this whole virginity thing. Because high school was just not my thing. I had friends in high school, but yeah, no. No one there really like did anything for me in the SAC region. So I'm like, you know what? I need to find someone. I know. Very, very heavy SAC. I needed to find some people who I could get the V card taken away from. And I wasn't particularly picky. And then I went to Atlanta Fantasy Fair. Yeah, it was a good time. I got my V card taken. Yay. And of course, now for now and forever, I associate cons with having sex just because, well, memories like the corners of my mind. And so to this day, I've always viewed cons as kind of not necessarily just about sci-fi and comics and fantasy and gaming, but also as a place to kind of meet someone new and see what can happen and maybe have a 20 to 30 minute private panel, if you know what I mean. So, and sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. But there's a catch when you're LGBT, and that is you don't really know who's on your team unless you can really suss them out with your gaydar skills.
You remember the name of your first?
Tyra. A woman. Everyone let that sink in. Not Tyra Banks, the model.
Oh, okay. Phew.
No. It got really quiet.
We were trying to give the moment its gravitas.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm not used to you being quiet. I don't know what to do about that. So still kept going to cons, and Magnum Opus Con 1 year, it was in Greenville, South Carolina. I met some amazing people there. Amazing people, and I don't remember much of it. I do remember that parts of me were chafed when I left the con. And I remember we were driving back down to Atlanta, and on one side of the highway was bright, sunny skies, and on the other side was dark, ominous storm clouds. It was very weird. It was one of those days where it's like we're riding the edge of judgment on the way back to Atlanta. And so we stopped at Shoney's for lunch.
Because when you're riding the wave of judgment back to Atlanta, Shoney's is a natural hideout.
It really is. So we stopped there. We had you know, lunch, and people who I roomed with were telling me about all the fabulous things I had done, a few of which I had forgotten. And I was like, oh, God, please give me a sign about what I should do, because this is really messed up if all that happened. And we go to check out, and the waitress's name was Chastity.
Of course it was.
I can't make that up. So I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting news. Well, of course, I was a member of a Rocky Horror troupe, so, you know, we all had sex with each other at that point, and, you know, things like that happen, kids.
I thought that's what Rocky Horror troops were for.
Exactly. That's why I joined.
For weird, misfit, loner kids to get laid.
Exactly.
And for
and it worked. And it completely worked.
Steps and learn what fishnets are.
Exactly. I had fishnets from Fredericks of Hollywood. They were industrial strength back then. You could wear those fuckers for a year. It was amazing. No runs ever in those. That was some real hooker gear back in the day. But, you know, time passes. And as LGBT stuff becomes more prevalent and more open in, you know, the media, pop culture, et cetera.
Society at large.
You know, we're now only two states away from having all the gay marriage bans dropped, at least in court. A lot of the rulings are still left in the appeal state, but Georgia and North Dakota are the two that are left. Because as we record this, Nebraska had theirs lifted today, and that goes into effect on March 9th. They're giving a week for Nebraska to get ready for gay marriage. So
that is awesome news.
So. It's very awesome news. So, of course, Georgia being the last.
I'm still betting on Texas holding out to the very bitter end.
Well, you know, you've at least got a couple of rulings, you know, in your favor over there. We have nothing here. So given all this and given the fact that LGBT folks are more out now than before, more available, more open, I thought it'd be cool to talk about the times when we've been at cons more recently than in the history, because obviously history, you know, is history. But how was that as an LGBT person meeting people and connecting with people at a convention? And did sexuality matter at all? Or did you meet someone and sexuality was like a big, like, oh, I know you like Star Trek, but no, thank you. Or, you know, any times those issues kind of played off each other? Ideas, Sabrina?
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you asking me?
Yeah.
I was texting.
Oh, Jesus. Pay attention, woman.
I'm not driving. I don't have to.
Oh, God.
Okay. you said the past isn't necessarily as prevalent as the present, but I think to understand the present, it helps to understand the past. So let's go back for a minute and look back at some of those old conventions, because back when not everybody was out, if you crossplayed, that was a big thing.
That's
because
that was amongst, like, drag.
Exactly. Amongst the convention, you would most definitely you'd be an oddity amongst oddities.
True.
Which that doesn't really go away over the course of time, but we'll get back to that. And you also, you actually ran a risk of physical violence from the general public, because the geeks probably wouldn't hurt you, but Joe Q Public was liable to go, "What the hell, faggot," and punch you in the face really hard. And the people nearby would all cheer because, you know, hooray, America.
So, America.
And that was just that, just cosplaying, you ran that risk. You know, dressed up like Cap Kirk, what? You look like some kind of faggot. And there we go. So, but it was just that much more for cosplay. But overall, like you said earlier, trying to tune in your gaydar, just trying to pick up on those who were similar to yourself, while, you know, and everything had to be subtle. You couldn't just come right in and go, "Oh my God, do you like dick? I like dick too." That was, you know, a little too easy. Instead, you had to do this kind of odd dance with people to try to figure out, exactly how many flavors are you? And again, this still echoes to this day, because you might meet somebody at the Spectrum party, but then you come to find out they're a furry, and their particular furry is a fox, and you have this phobia about foxes, and suddenly, you know, things aren't necessarily that compatible, because these things happen, and you're laughing, but the crazy thing is, I'm not even overcomplicating it yet.
No, you're not.
That's just an actual possibility of hooking up in fandom, particularly with the emergence of LGBTQPRL, whatever, culture.
Four M's and a silent Q.
Darren, how many letters of the alphabet do we have to use to be politically
LGBT,
correct?
Which is the main one, ligbit, and the T is not silent.
seldom. I, very seldom.
Yeah. I is intersexed. A is asexual, and A is also allies. So it's seven, really.
Didn't they have a queer in questioning at one point?
Well, yeah.
So now I've
see, I think of queer as being like the whole.
I notice it's getting longer because they're starting to go with LGBTQ.
QIA, I think, is the long
one. LGBTQIA. What the hell?
Now you know your ABCs, yes.
Apparently.
But, you know, when you go to a con, and like some of the cons that are very accepting, even though are obviously every con around for the most part is going to be heterodominant. That's just the way it is. But
that's statistics.
Yeah. Luckily, most con folk are fairly open-minded and will not shut you down for friendship and conversation like used to happen. I was at Dragon Con, I guess, in the early 90s, and we just met this guy, and he started hanging out with our group for a bit, and then he realized we were all gay, and he just turned around and walked off. Didn't see him the rest of the weekend. Not even a goodbye, see you guys later. We weren't being closeted, and we weren't being, you know, covert about it. It was just like, we're not, you know, the screaming queen, you know, stereotype.
And for all you know, he ran off. You didn't see him for the rest of the weekend because he spent the rest of the weekend going, "Oh my God, those guys, they're gay, and they're like not hiding it. And that could be me." For all you know, that's why you never saw him for the rest of the weekend, and why he ran off.
Could be. Who knows? You never know. It's like, okay, that was weird.
I will say this. At Dragon Con was where I tried live action role play for the first time.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, goodness, had very little to do with it.
Clearly.
Well, it was me. What do you want? Anyway, so that was where I really got my first exposure to out gay men. That was where I learned what bears were. That's where I learned what a tragic gay was. that entire group, it's the Greenville gang. That entire group, they were very educational, and that was where that had an impact on me, because I saw gay men who were living openly. And I went, huh, that's pretty brave.
Yeah, you can actually do that. That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. You got to respect that. And they were decent guys. They were nice people. They were fun to be around. How could you not like gays? I didn't get it. And on top of that, if you said, no thanks, I'm straight, they were fine with it.
Yeah, and that's key.
It's not like they were going to jump you, pin you down, wrestle you to the floor and go, oh, yeah, you're going to like this, all the little twinks like this.
Well, I mean, that's the scary part for most straight guys, is that they think gay men are going to treat them like they would treat a woman.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's where a lot of this comes from, is they imagine the sex act that gay men do, and they can't imagine themselves doing it, so they act out, oh, my God, that's sick, how repulsive, how can you do that?
That frightens me in my bunghole.
Exactly. It's like, well, you know, if you're not into it, we're not going to do that with you.
But most of the time, isn't it, though, when somebody gets all defensive and everything, it's because they're interested in it and that they don't want to admit to it.
You bring up a very good point, sir. University of Georgia did a study, and it's been duplicated in several other schools, and it was actually printed in the medicine journal. I think it's Maryland. I'd have to look it up. In which they blind tested men. They gave them a questionnaire. You know, if you've ever been to a psychology class at a college and they say, yeah, you have to sign up for take part in all these experiments, and they give you this 1,000 question survey so they can see all the answers to all these questions that cover hundreds of topics almost. And there's double blind questions in there. You get to like question 400. It's like, haven't I already answered this? Yeah, they're testing you to make sure you're consistent.
Oh, sure. You know,
you're not just going A, B, C, D, E, A, B, C, D, E, whatever. And they brought those guys in and put a measuring device, I don't know what it is, I swear to God, around their junk. And we all know what we mean by junk.
Wait a minute. The ring of microphone goes around the base of the junk. Okay,
it does. It does.
And how does this experiment go, Professor?
And then they showed them pornographic images. And what they found out is men who didn't care one way or another about homosexual content or a homosexual – they weren't violent towards homosexuals. They weren't homophobic in their survey, didn't react to homosexual images being shown. But what they found out was 80% of the guys who said they were homophobic on the survey or tested as homophobic on the survey responded positively to homosexual porn images.
Well, it totally makes sense. You know, so that's
80% chance, 4 out of 5.
Sure, but that's why they lash out, and that's why.
Yeah, totally. And totally. There's a lot of that self-loathing and self-hatred that they project outward because they haven't dealt with their own stuff. A lot of us have gone through what I call the crucible. You have to deal with your crap. I was raised strict religious family. I got engaged to a woman, and I had to say, you know, this is not my life, because I'm miserable. I'm making everyone else around me happy, but I am completely miserable.
I beg to differ. I think if you check back, a few of them will be more than happy to explain to you, you weren't making them happy.
That's true, too, because one of them wound up a lesbian.
Being incredibly miserable like you were, it's kind of hard to make anybody else happy.
True, 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 true.
Just throwing that out there. Not like
I agree with you completely. Now, I just thought I was doing what I was supposed to do, what my family wanted me to do, what my society wanted me to do. But I was depressed. I gained weight. I was miserable. And I, you know, Sabrina's absolutely right. I was probably making other people miserable around me.
Oh, you were, trust me.
And I had to break all that off and start fresh, basically, with like new friends, new surroundings, new everything in order to get back to square one, where I was at a place where I was able to say who and what I was and deal with it in a positive way, as opposed to negatively, like going out and beating somebody up for no apparent reason.
Well, exactly. And I hate to say it, most people who were geeks or nerds growing up, you know, were bullied.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, it didn't even matter on their sexual orientation or not such. It just was, we all experienced it.
Well, I was bullied in high school until about 10th grade. And that's when you didn't have to take PE anymore. Once you got out of the atmosphere for me of the high school locker room environment, then I was free and clear as a high school student. But 8th and 9th grade were hell. But I would say if you are LGBT in at least the Atlanta area where we're from, there's AtlantaCon, which is a very relaxed atmosphere, LGBT-friendly convention.
I thought it basically was the LGBT convention.
It is.
It's LGBTQIA,
all the initials.
They just add geek on the end.
Geek, LGBT geek, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. It's the LGBT GeekCon.
Yeah, there's a lot of gaming that goes on there. There are some panels that go on there. There's a lot of quiet. It's a relaxing con. It's not a dragon by any stretch of the imagination. Someone actually said AtlantaCon is Dragon Con's gay little brother or sister. So I'm like, really little.
Gay little brother slash sister. We're not really sure yet.
We're not really sure. Yeah.
And I know there's also FrolicCon.
FrolicCon
is
its own special creature. FrolicCon is basically a kink convention.
I've always explained it as an alternate lifestyle convention.
Yeah.
Because pretty much if you've got an alternate lifestyle, it's the convention for you.
It
doesn't really matter what your alternate lifestyle is.
And it's not it's certainly not – I didn't think when I was there it was gay dominant at all. It's everything is there. You have poly families there. You have people into leather. If you have a kink,
you
will
have
find
nudists.
It. Yeah.
Yep. If you're into something, you're going to be able to find somebody else who's into something. My favorite is the bulletin board where you just go and you go, hey, I'm looking for this. And you tack it up and you look and see what other people are looking for so that you can make connections.
Do you find that those two Atlanta shows are against the norm, or do you think that are there similar shows in other parts of the country?
Well, there's BentCon out in LA.
I think there are cons like that around the country,
yeah.
Just not quite as many as there are comic cons and stuff like that. But the thing is, you will find many of the same people at the same events. Hey, oh my God, I saw you at the fisting demo at FrolicCon, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, how you been? And you're standing around at Comic-Con. So.
The geek does overlap there. For
a
sure.
lot of overlap in the two communities. So while we're discussing the LGBT connections for conventions, there's also how one tends to lead into the other. Most of the people that I know in the convention scene, I know from actually doing FrolicCon and then finding out, they were all at DragonCon as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of the FrolicCon and DragonCon, there's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot of overlap.
Yes. A lot of overlap. Yeah, it's like Margaret Cho said, there's this really weird connection between Star Trek, leather sex, and the Renaissance Fair.
And she's
not lying. That's a joke, but she's not lying about that. If you're into any of those things, you'll go, yeah, that's right.
at a dealer's room at Dragon Con, at a dealer's room at Comic Con, at a dealer's room at FrolicCon, at all three, I'll just bet I can buy myself a leather harness.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Or a tight corset.
I can buy one in any of those three locations.
Yep. So there's a lot of overlap and there's a lot of cross. And actually, some people who go to the more mainstream cons like Dragon Con take the opportunity to experiment with sexuality when they go to Dragon Con.
Yeah.
While, you know,
they're
it's
on
always,
vacation, for God's sake.
They're on vacation and
millions.
Might as well. Oh, that person who I don't know and my, they look good. Okay, let's try that one. Which is fine and dandy. Just play safe.
It's like a buffet, sure, but do, you know, take
don't
what
take
you want,
more than you can
what
eat.
You take, and remember, wrap that rascal.
Please.
Or dental dam is not necessarily a bad idea. Uh-huh. Remember, open source usually mean no.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's helpful, really helpful tips for the kids. Remember, kids, oh, it's just a cold sore means no.
It's true. It's true.
Unless you're married to them.
The thing is also, like with Dragon Con, though, they, on top of the, you know, GBLT stuff, they also have a lot of the fetish stuff there, too.
They do, but my issue with Dragon Con's scheduling of all that is it all starts after 10 p.m.
Right.
And it seems like all the tracks have something adultish in the track listing, but they're all at the same bloody time. And of course, you hear from the track people that, you know, well, we may not have this next year because not a lot of people came to it. I'm like, well, that's because it's up against 20 other panels with the same basic topic. Not everyone in Star Trek is going to be into kink. And not everyone in...
Well, we gotta make sure the kids don't get into it.
Yeah. But,
you know, it might do them some good. That's kind of what they're here for. And, you know, they have parents. So those are all mitigating factors.
I agree. I think there's parents need to be more involved in if the kids go to Dragon Con, what the kids are actually going to.
Exactly. And it should not necessarily fall to the rest of us to be policed by, well, children might come in and see it and we wouldn't want them exposed. Well, maybe you should expose them for starters. And on top of that, baby, it's not my kid, so it ain't my problem. You keep an eye on your kid.
On the other hand, Dragon Con's got the reputation of being, quote unquote, not very family friendly. I mean, I know several people who will not go to Dragon Con or take their kids there even during the day simply because of what they've seen or what they've heard about the show, especially what happens at night.
Well, I agree. At night, it's not appropriate for kids. Well, I would agree 100% with that.
Well, we always warn about it that it's, you know, there's a big difference about Dragon Con during the day and then Dragon Con after dark.
Yeah, usually around 7 p.m., it's time to take the kids home or to the hotel room or something because the costumes are going to get a little more showy. People are going to get drunker.
But by the same token, there are people who are wandering around with their ass hanging out because they're, I'm wearing a thong, so it's okay.
Yeah. You know, and that's a matter of appropriateness.
And they're doing that at 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
So,
although I have seen some of the hotels cracking down on that. Some of them. Not all of them, but some of them.
I'm still going with, that's inappropriate for children. Maybe you're at a convention.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
good news. Your child's worldview is getting expanded. By the way, just making sure I'm going to put out there, I hereby state clearly for the record, I have no children. I would make a horrible parent, and that's why I don't have any. I didn't make any because I'd be a shitty parent. Just throwing that out there while I throw out parental advice.
There you go.
Clarify. Thank you.
And I don't have kids either. Not that I'm aware of, at least.
No, the rabbit is still alive.
Is it? Okay. Well, darn. For me, I think Dragon Con is still really overly sensitive to the issues that they've had concerning an ex-person involved with that convention. And so I think sometimes –
speaking of kids in Dragon Con.
Yeah. Well, I think they are very sensitive to that issue, and I understand why they are sensitive to that issue. I do think there is a certain line when you're like, there are kids at the rave.
We're
in the Marriott at 4 in the morning.
You're kidding.
No.
No.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a convention.
There are kids at the raves. There are kids at the raves. They're not
there are kids at raves place. Elsewhere, too. I have bad news for you.
Yeah, there are kids at raves at the Masquerade at Aaron, 18 and under shows.
I think we're straying from the actual topic, though.
Oh, are we? Oh, okay.
Have we ever been on the main topic?
Never.
Yeah, we totally hit the main topic. I distinctly remember smacking it on the ass at least 2 or 3 times.
Woo, thank you. I love it when you do that.
Yeah, I know you do. You're a dirty boy.
I am. I'm a really dirty boy. It's true.
That's what you really come on these things for, isn't it? Advertising.
Totally.
Good for you.
Call me, people. Call
hey,
me.
Hey, that's right.
Still troll single. Your, still
troll
single.
Troll your fan base, baby. Troll your fan base. Oh, by the way,
I have a fan.
There is someone out there who is looking. Oh,
Anywho.
Someone out there is looking to do Darren an incredible solid. All you got to do, pick an era of Element Lad costume. Do yourself up as Jan era. Remember, the hair is important. You know, if you have the Dave Cockrum suit, you need the little tight Jericho fro. But somebody out there, dress a twink as Element Lad and throw him at Darren at a convention, because, you know, kind of like a Legionnaire sacrifice. It would be a good thing in the universe, and there'd probably be a lot of pictures before he started destroying that Zentai suit. Remember, it's easy to do. Just send off to China for one of the Zentai suits where they go, how you want it to look? Here, this Dave Cockrum design. Oh, that good. No problem.
You got it on their website. You're painting quite the, you know, predatory picture of me. I would at least like do dinner and a movie first. Come on.
No.
Unless, of course, I've had pie, then all bets are off.
If he shows up at a party, that's pretty much all you need. And then later on, you can thank me for it. You did say we were trolling your fan base, right?
Yes. I don't think I have a fan base, but that's okay.
Well, maybe you will.
I guess this will prove it or not, kids. So if I have a fan base, yay. But if you are LGBT or alternate lifestyle, Frolicon is the first weekend of April.
It's Easter weekend, kids.
Always really Easter weekend. Because people who would protest it are busy.
That's right. And you know what? If you go, I can't make it. I can't skip Easter with my family. Well, look at it this way. Did they get you for Thanksgiving? Yes. Did they get you for Christmas? Yes.
Yes.
You know, you can skip one holy day. They'll understand, oh, I've got this business trip to Iowa. Darn the luck.
It's true. And you'll be on your knees anyway at Frolicon. So, you know.
Not.
Praying. I mean, praying.
Yeah. So back to the main topic.
Yes. Again.
Again.
Oh, yeah, that main topic. To be LGBTQRDFLT at a convention. So really, these days, it's actually pretty cool to be anywhere in that particular rainbow spectrum while at a convention, because now you actually do have people who are just straight, just out. Hell, half the time, you know, Darren, how many times have you had a puppy run up to you and go, I'm gay?
Quite a few, because, you know, when I went to HeroesCon last year, when I wasn't in Wonder Warrior, I wore a rainbow flag button, because I figured that's the easiest way to signal to people. Like, oh,
it's
rainbow.
It's like a little American flag or a Nazi flag.
It kind of is. Yeah. It's like, here you go. Here's my label. Have a nice day. And I had a couple of people give me the nod and the smile and go, uh-huh, interesting.
Well, that's one of the interesting things, actually, is the amount of crossplay also. Women playing male characters and men playing female characters and such. It's actually just growing.
Yeah, I think it's a little more freeing for people to be able to do a crossplay, because you don't have to stick to the costume of the original person, which everyone can get really anal about, if you'll pardon the pun. Like, I've seen people at a Dragon, for instance, talk about someone's costume and go how they got this wrong or that wrong. And I'm like, they're just having fun. They're not.
It's not like they're professional. Exactly.
You know, they're not doing this for the movies.
Not doing this for accolades, kids.
Yeah.
They're just doing it for fun.
They're doing it for fun.
Let them have a good time.
Calm down. You know, they may have gotten something wrong on the issue that you saw, but this is their version of this character. Let it go. And when I'm dressed up as Wonder Warrior, I have the most fun in that costume ever, because while people see the iconography of Wonder Woman, they're looking at a dude. And that kind of mental scenario, it's like, wait a minute, something's not right here. Something's not right here. But I did it like a Roman warrior, a Greek warrior outfit would be. So it's kind of got a 300 feel as well. So it's like, it's got leather's a very masculine, or at least a very assertive fabric. And it's like, that raises the butch factor. And it's got the metal bracers. And it's like, wow, but it's Wonder Woman. It's like, well, it's her costume. But it's around a guy. And it's just interesting to me to see guys react to that specifically. I've had women react to that and yell at me for looking better in that costume than they do.
Really?
I would disagree with that assessment, but two women have done that, separate women. One woman one day actually came up to me and said, "Oh my God, I loved you," and put her hand up my kilt and grabbed the junk.
Wow.
And I'm like, "Hi, how are you?" And I grabbed her wrist and said, "I'm Darren. Nice to meet you." like, either you've had a lot of alcohol or, yeah. So.
Oh, you got groped once.
I got groped, but it was by a woman. So sad. But, you know, my favorite crossplay last year at DragonCon was Prom Dress Batman.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
Funny.
Prom Dress Batman.
He's been around. He made the rounds. He took that costume a lot of places.
Yes, he has. You can just Google him. Prom Dress Batman. He's a beefy dude in the frilliest, pinkest prom dress you've ever seen in your life with a Batman cowl.
Very funny.
It's hilarious. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I love you." Unfortunately, I didn't run into him in my Wonder Warrior outfit, or else that would be really epic. But, you know.
That would have been one for the ages.
On the flip side, Darren, on the flip side of your experience, it's Wonder Woman, but a dude. Yeah, people don't react quite so negatively to that. On the other hand, on my side of the fence, I've actually known a lot of crossplayers who pretty much that was their first big outing, and one thing leads to another. The dominoes continue to tip, and they go, "Yeah, actually, I'm trans and I'm crossing over." Mm-hmm. They go ahead and transition, and a lot of times it's their crossplay that gives them the confidence to really make those realizations about themselves and so forth. That was not necessarily for me. But on the other hand, I've also noticed I have a horrible, horrible propensity for doing crossplay. You know, I have a Superwoman suit. Okay, if you look throughout DC continuity, there is a female version of every male character. They established an entire chunk of the multiverse for it. That one's Earth 11. That's where everybody's gender swapped. Okay, covered. Moving along. We also have Rule 64, which covers that as well.
I thought it was 63.
Is it 63?
I thought it was 63.
Okay, you're probably right. Anyway, so with all of that said, I'm horrible about it. I do it all the time. I have an amazing Batwoman suit. I have an amazing Superwoman suit. I have an amazing Lady Captain Marvel. I realized at one point that I was just kind of baiting the audience with these things. You know, it's like, really? Did you need to do this? Couldn't you do Wonder Woman? I mean, you got black hair and everything. That's too easy. That is actually one of my resolutions this year, is I'm actually, you know, gonna stick with the actual girl characters, preferably busty ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. All of them?
Well, you know, they are comic book characters. So
yeah,
so I got that going for me.
Yeah, yeah, you got both of those things going for you. That's true.
So as far as that goes, I'll also throw in, okay, look, let's not mince words about this. Guys react incredibly negatively. Gay men don't care for the most part, although they can be freaking rude. They'll wander up and just grope you because they think that they're at a drag show.
That's true.
They'll come up and grope you and go, "Oh my God, those look fabulous." Grab your tits and squeeze them like they're fucking water balloons. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to curse there. It's one of those things where you're like, "Oh, you jerk." So there's that. And then as far as straight men go, straight men, you know, it's the trap syndrome. They see you, they look at you, they're like, "Oh my God, she's hot." And then they go, "Wait a minute. I think that might be a dude." Because honestly, you know, once again, let's not mince words. When a lot of straight guys see a trans woman, they immediately default to, "Wait, that's a dude." It's a crude reaction, but it's still very much in place societally.
Well, yeah, so, and we have the crying game to thank for that, I think, for the most part.
Not
anymore, but you know, back when trans became really much more of a thing,
it gained visibility with the Grind game.
Exactly.
But that's not what established trans folk as traps. I mean,
well, true. I was just talking about when it hit mainstream. More people knew about that than
as far back as the turn of, as the dawn of the 20th century. There were prostitutes that were cross dressing, or in whatever state of transition they could accomplish medically at the time. Mm-hmm. At the dawn of the 20th century, we've been around for a little while in various forms. But it's always through popular media, we've always been viewed as traps. Because it's you look over, you're like, oh my God, she's hot. And then you go, oh my God, she's a dude. Even to the point of how many movies have there been where, the guy's making out with the girl and then suddenly she goes, there's something I need to tell you.
Uh-huh.
It is that way. So that mindset is what we see at the conventions in that, I'll be strutting my fine tushy on through. You talk about legs, girl, I got some legs. Mine are in heels. I do all those squats. That's why I've got this fantastic booty.
I don't do heels.
Of course, it squeezes heels. Everything up and down. So I've got great boobs and a great butt. And ta-da! And still, while that's going on, guys are reacting strongly to it because it's a target-rich environment. Guys are visual hunters. They're looking around at a lot of pretty girls. This is a convention. And then they click on one of us and they go, confusing feelings make Hulk feel bad.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, especially new folks to conventions, might be really socially awkward. Just now coming out and trying to feel out the geek community.
Sometimes not even new folks to convention.
Yeah, sometimes not even new folks. But for the most part, most of the folks going to cons these days are really relaxed about it. You will still run into folks who have an issue.
You're always going to find extreme opinions
on either side. It's true.
Right. Exactly. Just be prepared for that.
Yeah, just take that with a grain of salt. Go to an LGBT-friendly con if you have a chance to. Dragon Con has the Spectrum Party, of course, which is a big LGBT rave.
And I'd like to correct you on that one.
Don't go
to an LGBT friendly con, kids. Go to a con.
True.
Go to a con. It doesn't have to be a gay friendly con. It doesn't have to be a gay con. Just go to a con and be yourself and do what you want to do. Embrace your fandom the way that you want to. And express it the way that you feel is right for you. Try to bear in mind that you're going to be around other people. So, if your fandom is walking around with a rubbery dildo tattooed to your forehead, maybe not before 9 o'clock or so, but
maybe Frolicon is the place for you.
That you could get away with all day long and it would be hilarious and everybody would play with it. You'd be the donga.
You'd be very popular.
You would be the donga corn. That would be awesome.
People would be sitting.
The donga need food.
People would be sitting on your head all day. So
potentially so, yes. But with all of that said, I just wanted to make sure that I got a counterpoint in there for kids. Just go to a con because whether you are LGBT or Q, whatever you are, you're going to find more people who share your interests, who are probably just as interesting as you are and probably just as screwed up as you are. And you might really make some amazing friends.
And as
Darren points out, you might just hook up even. Which
you might get lucky. Be safe.
Not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah, be safe. We gave that speech already, Dad.
I know, but guess what? They're kicking us off the station. They found us.
Oh, man.
Well, I gotta go.
I hate the shuttle. Why do they always stick us in the shuttle?
Because we're the help.
I'm gonna beam down.
We're the help. I'm gonna go make a pie. No one gets that reference. It's two Oscars.
We do. Oh, we get it.
No, but you're gonna.
Oh, promises, promises.
The apple.
I think we've beaten the con horse to death. Just go to a con, kids. Have a good time.
And whatever you feel like dressing up as, dress up. Doesn't matter, if it's the same sex as you are, so what?
I want to see someone
cosplay as me as Wonder Woman and as Sabrina Pandora as Superwoman. That's what I want to see.
You never will know. You might be surprised.
I might be surprised.
I have seen people cosplaying me before.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Pretty much, do you have an Elvira-esque look? Maybe
that's true.
You know, Elvira, Vampirella, Morticia. You know, we're an archetype.
That's true, you are.
Yeah, so, you know, they knock out any of those, and it's like, oh!
You've made yourself into, you know, the zeitgeist of the goth girl.
I'm so proud!
You should be.
I wish Mama were undead here to see it.
Any final words?
See you in a few more months before Dragon Con, I guess, and we'll talk about something else.
Exactly.
Something fabulous!
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment then.
You gotta ask yourself one question, punk.
What the hell is a cigar nerd?
Welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast.
It's the only show where two guys smoke cigars and talk about nerd culture.
Do you like movies, games, comics, sci-fi, pop culture, and beer?
Do you like science, nerd news, explosions for no apparent reason?
Then this is the show for you.
It's like being in a nerdy cigar shop, but for your ears.
Check us out at CigarNerdPodcast.com.
Welcome back to the show. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, with us on the line, we've got Edward Owen of Con GT with us, which is a Doctor Who-related convention coming up March 13th through 15th in Clarksville, Tennessee. Welcome to the station, Ed.
Hey, thanks, Mike and Mike. I appreciate you having me and helping promote the con.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. Now, tell us a little bit about the history of the show. Is this a new show?
This is brand new. It all started a couple of years ago. I was in Orlando. I'm a Doctor Who fan. I was in Orlando, and Hurricane Who just happened to be going on when I was there. Went to the show, had a great time. First time I'd been to a Doctor Who con. Then I came back and went to Concaster Boris down in Huntsville.
Right.
And nobody was doing a Doctor Who con near us. We're right outside of Nashville. So, you know, nobody's doing one there. Nobody was doing one here particularly. So I just thought, what the heck? Let's start a con. And, I lost my mind. And last summer we decided to do it. Here we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, congratulations. I know that putting on a show is a very daunting task. Did you have any experience with cons? Did you know what you were getting into?
Well, I don't have experience with cons per se, but my background years ago was putting on conventions and trade shows. So I knew the formula of, you know, getting hotels booked and trade show floors and, you know, masses of people, that kind of thing. So it was just the next step was really dealing with talent and, you know, getting, and that's a whole different ballgame, I will admit. But, you know, once it's kind of a labor of love because I enjoy doing this kind of thing and I'm a travel agent. So I do group travel and tours and things like that. So, you know, it's been busy and it's been tough at times. I had a fairly decent, you know, background in getting into this thing.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, speaking of talent, you've got some interesting guests lined up.
We do. I'm real pleased to have Ellis George coming in. Ellis George, of course, you know, as a first-year con, I didn't know what we would be able to get. And, you know, the interesting thing about doing this is it's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And I have learned in watching other cons and in this one, you can't count on anybody being here until they step off the plane.
Right.
You know, because I had actually talked to Gareth David Lloyd a couple of times in person about this, and he was all excited. So we had him booked. We had Dan Starkey booked, who was Commander Strax. Both of them backed out. So, but we ended up, we've got Ellis George, who was Courtney on Series 8, young 16-year-old actress from London. She's just now beginning to hit the con circuit, so we're really excited to have her. And then, you know, for the classic series, Andrew Cartmell. Of course, Andrew is he's a staple in these types of events.
Oh, and, yeah, we've met Andrew a couple times at TimeGate, and he's a wonderful get.
Andrew is an interesting guy, and I have become his American post office. I don't know if you know this, but Andrew collects vinyl records.
Oh, yes, we do.
Well,
Well, when we booked him, he contacted me and he said, is there a place I can send packages to, you know, before I get to America and then I can take them back? I said, yeah, send them to my house. I have got like 20 boxes of records in my closet that have been coming in for Andrew Cartmell for the last 2 months. So I told him, I said, my closet's going to seem empty after he leaves here.
Hey, Ed, here's a piece of advice then. Don't let him in McKay's until after the convention's over because you won't see him again all weekend.
Well, you know, he's coming in on Thursday night and Friday's pretty much open. And we're already, we've arranged to take him to Nashville because he hasn't been there and looked around. So that's pretty exciting. And then we've got a young lady named Robin Burks. Robin is actually a friend of mine. Robin is she's a cosplayer extraordinaire. She just got back from Gallifrey One, so she kind of hits the circuit as well. Plus, she is a writer. She writes for Tech Times. She also has a couple of science fiction novels out. And so she's going to join us. And then last week, or about 2 weeks ago, we added a Doctor Who tribute band called Legs Nose Robinson, who are going to be there on Saturday night. We have a Doctor Dances dance party. They're going to open that up. And I would urge you to go to YouTube and look up Legs Nose Robinson. They're really, really good. They're out of Nashville, and we're very excited to have them as well.
Awesome. Now, is this taking place in a hotel or a convention center?
Yeah, it's actually taking place. There's a hotel down in downtown Clarksville. Clarksville's a very hilly place, and so like the highest hill in town, there's this hotel that overlooks the river called the Riverview Inn. And by the way, you can find out all of this at congt.org. That's our website. And then we're also doing our Friday night VIP party. There's a really beautiful a party room up top one of the banks downtown that also overlooks downtown and the river and all the lights and everything. So we're doing that. But it's the Riverview Inn is the name of the hotel where we're doing it. And everything will be situated out of that hotel. They have some convention facilities in the hotel.
That's great. That's great. We found definitely with a lot of fan shows like this, when they're in hotels rather than convention centers, there's a lot more interaction with fans. And, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't end simply like, you know, when the convention center closes.
Well, yeah, you know, and I've already had people asking me about how's the hotel going to take late night partying. And, you know, and I basically said, hey, that's between you and the hotel, you know. We shut our stuff down at certain times. What you do after that is your business. But I think people are coming to have a good time, and you know, that's all you can ask. You know, we're going to hopefully give them a good show to attend and a lot of information. And the cool thing about it, guys, when I first decided to do this and announced it, and we set up a Facebook page and all of that, the fun thing about it was seeing all the people who were big time fans. Who, you know, didn't know there were other big time fans in the area. And they got to kind of, you know, get together and talk. And we have a very active Facebook group now. And the show is looking very good for a first year con. You know, we're already looking at year number two. We'd like to expand it, you know, in various ways. You know, I don't know where we're going to end up. But, you know, I don't think I could ask for it as of right now to have gone any better than it has gone. So I'm very excited about it.
Wow. Don't jinx it.
Yeah, really. Isn't that the case? You know, I'll start seeing cancellations come through or something like that. So,
no, it sounds like a great event. Of course, you're going to have panels. I see the Doctor Who boot camp for those people who are sort of new to the franchise, a little bit of primer there.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about the boot camp. We actually changed it. I haven't changed it on the website. We wanted something because, you know, there's always people at these things who are drug along who have no idea what's going on, or they're there because they want to be and they want to learn. You know, so what we're going to do is we're going to do it a little bit differently. Instead of the boot camp, we're going to do like a Letterman top 10.
Oh,
I
see.
The open.
Excellent.
You know, the top 10 things you need to know about Doctor Who. And, you know, we'll have clips, video, people talking about it, and then we'll, you know, say, okay, make sure you know this and that kind of thing, and just have some fun with it. So we changed it from a more serious boot camp to just a top 10 list.
Excellent, excellent. And, of course, encouraging costuming, cosplay with cash prizes, excellent. That always brings out the best of the folks.
Yeah, you know, we if you had told me that this is kind of my history here. You know, I'm an older guy for this kind of stuff. And so if you'd have told me 2 or 3 years ago I'd be dressing up at a convention, I would have said, you're crazy. And but I remember what happened was the day that they announced Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, I'm sitting here watching it on the, you know, on the internet, I think, or something, or maybe I guess it was on BBC America Live. I'm watching it. When they named Peter Capaldi, I said, hey, that's me. I've got the gray hair. You know, that's my age group. I'm going to be a doctor. And, you know, that's probably the only thing I will ever cosplay. But I truly enjoy seeing the, you know, the excitement that people put into their costumes and all the work. It's been fun kind of watching people in the news group or the Facebook group, you know, plan and get ready. And we've got a guy here in town that that builds props. Just an amazing artist who is building us a couple of full-size Weeping Angels, you know, for the con.
Nice.
We've got the, I think it's four guys in the TARDIS or four people in a TARDIS. Folks from down in Macon are bringing up their full-size TARDIS. We'll actually have two TARDISes. And so it's just a fun way to enjoy yourself and, you know, meet with like-minded people. That's what makes life fun.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we wish you the best on your inaugural year. Again, it's March 13th through 15th in Clarksville at the Riverview Inn, ConGT. And yes, you can go to congt.org. Anything else you want people to know?
No, I appreciate you guys letting us on here, it truly is kind of the people's con. So we've put out our schedule and all that, but we are open to suggestions if there are things we need to cover or, you know, whatever, we'll welcome it. And, just invite people to come on up and spend the weekend in Clarksville with us.
Awesome. Awesome. And at that website, you can find out all the information on tickets. They are available. You can purchase them right there. So, well, congratulations, Ed, and look forward to hope you have a great show. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Can't wait to hear all about it.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike and Mike. We appreciate it.
Well, that's a convention that's coming up in a couple weeks, and unfortunately, you won't find any of the ESO crew there, although we'll be there in spirit, right, Mike?
Oh, definitely, and I think, actually, is Kirby going to that show?
Friend of the station. He's the one who helped hook us up with Ed, so big shout-out to Kirby for that.
Yes, very much so. Thanks, Kirby.
And I'm sure there's going to be other friends of the station there as well. We've got a lot of friends in the Tennessee area, so.
Wouldn't be surprised if Mary Lou Who shows up.
I would not be surprised. And now real briefly, let's just talk about a show that unfortunately I was not able to make this past weekend, which was AnacroCon due to a severe sprained Achilles tendon. I was off my feet for the entire weekend, but...
Well, Mike, you know what I told you about doing all that jogging.
I am a long distance runner.
Oh, definitely long distance.
Yeah, exactly. It just takes me a long time. And now it takes me even longer. AnacroCon. So Faber, you were there. How was it?
It was amazing. It was my first time going to AnacroCon because usually the same weekend is Canuga up in China.
Absolutely. And which is the same weekend this time too.
Exactly. And so this year we had been requested by our friend Teresa to help them out. And so of course, you know, they were the first ones to get in contact with us, so we helped her out, and it was awesome. It was at the Century Center Marriott here in Atlanta, and where we go for Atlanta Comic Con. TimeGate is going to be there this year, and it was just a fantastic group of people. I was there only on Saturday, but I ended up doing 7 panels.
Woo!
Alan of TimeGate fame, also had a Doctor Who track there, and I helped them out. So I was between the two. I was just nonstop almost all day. But I got to see lots of friends. I saw Karen and Robert Ray, of course, Teresa. I saw Alan. I hung out with James Palmer. It was just really nice to be there. And I also saw fellow podcasters, of course. I saw Jennifer Hartshorn from Earth Station Who and Marvel, the Marvel podcast, the Earth Station MCU. And of course, we got to see Joe Harris of the Cigar Nerds.
Yes, I was kind of bummed that really I didn't get the chance to meet him. So,
I have plenty of times I think you will get to meet him, sir. So it was really a nice time, and the crowds were really decent. And the steampunk stuff, I'm not totally into it, but it fascinates me. All the clothing, all the gadgets and such, and how original these people are. It's just, it's a lot of fun.
Seems like they also branched out. I mean, you know, Teresa was running the classic sci-fi track, so I know I was looking forward to talking about things like the Planet of the Apes franchise and the War of the Worlds type movies and books and all that kind of stuff. And just a lot of and you were talking about Doctor Who stuff. I mean, it's sort of now was the Doctor Who stuff that you talked about. Did it cross over into like kind of the steampunk parts of Doctor Who?
No, it was just pure Doctor Who stuff.
Gotcha. And so it's just really kind of branching out a little bit more.
Oh, very much so. Like, you know, one of the topics was the 10th anniversary of the new series. Another one was Series 8 review. Then we also did a review of the 50th anniversary special. And so it was, I think, one of my favorites that we did is the morality of Doctor Who. And that actually might be a good topic for ESW sometime.
Interesting. Yes, I could see that.
And so I think that would be a really good thing, because especially with the Doctor asking, am I a good man? So,
yeah, so, absolutely.
But it was a lot of fun, and you know, it was the enthusiasm of everybody there was just awesome.
Great. Well, it sounds like a great time, and we'll definitely have to keep it on the calendar for next year. Okay. So, before I get to the other shows, I do want to remind folks that this will be the last week. This weekend is the last week to watch Battle Space Wars at Dad's Garage in Little Five Points, Georgia. These are from the guys that brought you the Revengeance and Effed Up Fairy Tales. It's a sci-fi adventure, and it's basically from the improv group. It's really funny, it's like I said, this is the last week you can catch it. So there's other events at Dad's Garage, so please don't feel that this is your only shot at going to see some great improv. But if you do want to see some really geeky stuff, you want to check out Battle Space Wars this weekend. Also coming up this weekend, March 6th through the 8th, is MarsCon, and that's in Bloomington, Minnesota. Our good friends from the Flopcast, Kevin and Cornflake, will be there. They will actually be recording a live episode of the Flopcast. Cornflake is teaching dementia water aerobics on Saturday and Sunday morning, and Kevin's band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation, is performing Sunday afternoon. So, you know, we've heard a lot of great things about MarsCon, especially the dementia track. The Flopcast folks will be there. We had the great Luke Ski on the other day, and he talked about it up. So it sounds like a great show. So if you're in Bloomington, Minnesota, you want to check that out. Towards the end of the month, March 21st through 22nd, is the South Carolina Comic Con. That's in Greenville, South Carolina. And you will find Mike and I there among many, many, many friends of the station. It's going to be a great show. Robert puts on – this is the second time for the event. So I know Robert put on a great show last year, and I expect even bigger and better this year. So come on out and say howdy to us. And, of course, as we kind of mentioned a little while ago, May 22nd through the 24th, Timegate in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike and I will definitely be there. Also, ESW and Earth Station MCU co-host Jennifer Hartshorn will be there as well. And so if you're looking for a Doctor Who convention in the Atlanta area, you'll definitely want to check out Timegate at the end of May.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of ESO, and it's been a very interesting show, and I want to thank Darren for taking the helm on that one.
Well, I thank you. My Mr. Sulu is ready to fly away at any moment.
Ah, the Star Trek reference.
Yep, LLAP. Exactly. Live long and prosper, people.
Exactly. Gosh, we did talk about that earlier, and it was just like, oh, we had the
all
hankies
the
out.
Trek feels.
Oh, yes. But like we said earlier, though, we will be doing in a couple weeks a episode dedicated to Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, sweet.
So we'll be talking about all his different roles and maybe even sing a round of Bilbo Baggins for everybody.
Oh, and don't forget his photography.
I thought we were honoring his memory.
Yeah, no filthing. Filthing is not honoring. That's
well, so Darren, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, sir. Anytime.
Anything you want to promote?
Legion of Substitute Podcasters.com. And of course, I will be at some point I'll be at Frolicon. I'm not sure when, And AtlantaCon's coming up second weekend of May, I believe, this year.
Actually, I think it's – is it the first – they're not doing it on Free
Comic Book Day. On Free Comic Book Day. I think they finally got that idea out of their head, and it's like, yay, good. I believe it's the second weekend of May. AtlantaCon.org is the website. Please go there and check it out. I'll be doing a match game, of course, probably a few other things. And then the next thing I will be doing is Gay Days at Walt Disney World in June, which is oh so much fun. And good luck finding me there. I'll be the one in the red shirt. And on Dragon Con, of course, I'll be there. So, hey, I am in my con season, and I'm loving it.
And you'll be part of the Dragon Con report all season, too.
That's what I hear.
Yes.
Oh.
That's what the contract says, at least. Dan.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Damn it.
I know.
Now the DragonCon report.
Exactly.
Sabrina, thank you, dear.
Thank you, darling. It was nice being here. I always love it when you have a monthly and I show up.
Hello.
Kinda. Auntie Sabrina always shows up at the worst possible time, stays a little too long, and punches you in the uterus going, "Where's a baby?"
Wow.
Wow.
And you like that one?
That John Waters moment was brought to you by...
thanks for having me, guys. As always, I'm always happy to ramble on for an hour. It's sad, but I do never shut up. Speaking of which... I am still running around with my cheerful Giant Girl Adventures webcomic, www.giantgirladventures.com. I know, who would possibly think to look for it there? But remember, boys and girls, Giant Girl Adventures, when you want mediocre comics produced on a very slow schedule. We actually are developing our spinoff titles, though. By golly, I'll make a comic book empire out of the internet yet.
There you go.
As soon as I figure out how to make it actually... pay somehow. Anyway, but thank you for having me, and live long and prosper.
Exactly. Whenever you find out how to make it pay, let us know. We can use that also up here on the network.
We all need business managers. That's what it is. We all need business managers who know how to take this raw talent and all this stuff we produce and market it.
Wow.
I understand the concept, but I understand concepts of quantum physics. This doesn't help me make a faster than light drive either.
You wanted a quick goodbye from Sabrina, right?
Yeah, right.
To quote a friend of ours, Big Mama D, this bitch can outtalk an echo.
I love it. And of course, my co-host for this week, Mr. Mike Gordon.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out, sir?
Yes, I actually do want to give a shout out to two comic folks that had their themselves actually appear on the big stage this week. I actually spotted artist Chris Hamer's artwork on the walls of an episode of Walking Dead this week. So way to go, Chris. Hope that leads to a bigger audience for you. And comic writer Nathan Edmondson, who's written a lot of stuff for Marvel and DC. He actually appeared on an episode of Rizzoli and Isles, actually got to hug Angie Harmon, and I am extremely jealous. And but it's always cool to see like comic people like kind of branching out and getting out there into the mass media. So congratulations to both of them.
Awesome, sir. Real quick, my shout out is going to go out to Jon Stewart. Yes, of the Daily Show. He is doing right now, as we speak, as we're recording this, a segment with Seth Rollins on Monday Night Raw, and they've been doing it between the Daily Show and Raw, and it's been awesome. A lot of fun, the crossover. And Jon Stewart's just a great sport and a great guy all around, and it's just a lot of fun. And it's just going to show how much he's going to be missed when he leaves the Daily Show. So I wanted to just shout it out. And, you know, you could see it all up on YouTube, and the stuff is funny as heck. So check it out, my friends. Of course, we'll be back again next week for another fun episode where we are going to be talking all about 2001 and its sequel, 2010. talk about the books, the movies. We might even get into the sequels of the sequel of the sequel, which have not yet been made into movies, but we might even get into those. But they're great stuff by Arthur C. Clarke, and we will be having a great crew up here for that. So check us out next time. My name has been Mike Faber, and we will talk to you now, if they let us back on the station after Darren and Sabrina got through with this episode.
Hey, good luck with that.
That paint washes off. Okay?
I'm sorry. We're going to have to search everyone coming on the station. Grab the rubber gloves, darling.
Are we going to have to buy another geek seat?
I think we are. They were using it. Well, we won't say what they were using for. But till next time, peace.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you can also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station 1.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
German? Forget it. He's rolling.
It ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough... The tough get going! Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.